Our topic today is truth and the concept of good and bad, good and evil. Is there a connection? Is there something that is truly good? And is there something that is truly bad? Is there a connection between what is true and false and what is good and bad? Let's expand. You ask the average person, what's good? What does it mean to be a good person? And he'll tell you, depends on which generation you live in. Go back 500 years, go back to Thomas Jefferson. He signed the Declaration of Independence, caused the revolution in the world. The world today, the goodness we see in the world today, is in great thanks to him. He's one of the people who we owe it to. The fact that there are democracies in the world, the people have the right to pursue freedom and pursue what they believe, to a great extent, that's thanks to Thomas Jefferson. So you think, oh, he's a good person, right? Thomas Jefferson had a slave. Is he a good person or is he a bad person? Is it good to have slaves or bad? Go back another 500 years. Or even stay in the generation of the Puritans. The Puritans believe that just like a person has to educate his children, well, if a child misbehaves, you smack him. So you have to educate your wife. If your wife misbehaves, you smack her. The Puritans had a special clip that if the wife spoke improperly to her husband, she was placed in the public square with her tongue stuck out and the clip stuck onto her tongue. And that was to shame her, to show that she had spoken improperly to her husband. How good were these Puritans?
Who are these people?
These were the people who founded the United States. The Puritans. So on the one hand, they started democracy. On the other hand, they had certain things that certainly today we wouldn't consider them good. Go back 1,000 years ago. What was the world like? What was a good person? Definitely not a person who respected his wife. How did he treat his children? How did he treat his fellow man? What's considered good? Every generation has different terms. So we start with Cain and Abel. Say, okay, to murder someone isn't good. And what about to take someone as a slave? What about to take someone for almost no wages? Go back only 100 years ago. The end of the 18th century, everyone was having child labor. Children were working everywhere. And they were being put to work. Oliver Twist. That's the way life was. And they were all good people. So what defines good and bad? The average person nowadays will say, every generation has to define for itself what is good and what is bad, because there is no true good and true bad. Right? That's what's going around today. Some people say, be a vegetarian, don't eat animals, what's the difference between humans and animals? Some people say, it's the survival of the fittest. Are they striving to be good people? Are they really good people? What makes a person good? What makes a person bad? So,
Rob, I have a job interview.
So, okay. Good morning. We're in the process of discussing: is there a connection between good and bad, and truth and false? About 10 years ago, a stray cat walked into a subway tunnel, and the conductor was about to start moving the subway, when one of the people ran up to the conductor and said, there's a cat in there, you're going to run it over, don't you dare move the subway. The conductor said, lady, I got 10,000 people in this subway, I can't detain my train because of a cat. And she said, I don't know how many thousand people you got in this train, but if all these thousands of people work together to bring that cat back to life, no one will be able to do it. And if you move the train, I'm going to sue. I work with animal rights. So the conductor says, why should I take this responsibility on myself? So he calls his boss, and he calls the manager of the station, and he says, hey, what should I do? This lady says she's going to sue. She's from animal rights. She says she saw a cat walk into there. Should I move or not? And the manager says, hey, I don't need this on my shoulders. He throws it up another level. Now, if you know how the subway system works in New York, the train has to leave the station so another train could come in. And each train that stays there, so there's another train that needs to come into the station that's waiting. So now you're having thousands of people be detained. And each one bumps it up a higher level because no one wants to take the responsibility. At the end of the day, no one wants to take the responsibility. They sent a dog catcher in to take out the cat. During this time, you've had over 500,000 people detained, some stuck in dark tunnels, some on their way to work, some on the way, actually it was the end of the day, the way back from work, they had to pick up kids. And this hit the news, and for a few hours, all they were discussing on the news was, what would you say? Is it right to continue moving the subway and mow over this cat, or is it not right? Now, some people started saying, what do you mean? You're going to detain 500,000 people for one cat? Cats die every day. And other people said that those 500,000 people spend the rest of their lives trying to create one cat, they'll never be able to do it. Come on, that's a life in there, a cat. And the talk shows started discussing this. And at the end, they came to the conclusion that there's legitimacy to say run over the cat, there's legitimacy to say don't run over the cat, there's no such thing as good and bad, whatever you believe, okay, you could do what you think is right. But if you do what you think is right, so there's a generation where what people think is right is to murder people of a different belief. This generation where people think is right. In the Torah it says that men are not allowed to marry men. But it doesn't say that one who does is abnormal. It says that it's forbidden. It's a disgusting act. But it doesn't say it's abnormal. Go to Russia up until recently. I don't know if it's changed. Anyone who did that was considered abnormal. He was put in an insane asylum. Go back 200 years and all over the world it was considered someone who was abnormal. Go back 1,500 years. Go back to Plato. And Plato writes that that's the ideal of morality is that every man take a small child to be at his side. So if you lived 1,500 years ago, that was to be the most moral person. If you lived 500 years ago, you were considered insane for the same act, which Plato writes is the most moral act there is. So what's good and what's moral? Fair question, right? Anyone want to suggest an answer?
Whatever the Torah says is moral.
Why?
Because if it's divinely given, then we have it the truth. It's only truth, right?
Did you say that Plato said that it was okay?
No, he said that it was the imperative. Symposium.
The opposite.
Plato, he said child molestation was the right
word. Not child molestation, though.
They didn't view it as molestation. The fact that the child was taken against his will, no one asked him, and that was a job in life. That was,
The Torah and the tradition of the Torah is the truth.
Oh. So, all of these conversations are predicated on the understanding that there's no connection between the word true and the word good. Good is something that is man-defined and will change with each generation. Bad is also defined by man and society and will change with each generation. That's, today, the common theory, unfortunately, even among many Orthodox Jews. If you speak to a lot of people, they'll say, you do the best you can, you do what you feel is good. Ask the average person, if they took a test, their wife was pregnant, and they discovered that the child had Down syndrome, or, God forbid, Tay-Sachs. The kid is going to die by the time he's 2 years old. Should they abort or shouldn't they abort?
They shouldn't.
Whether they should or shouldn't, the average person is going to say, well, we'll talk to the... Today they have counselors in the hospital, and they have bioethics committees, and people at the end of the day are going to decide what they think is best for the child. And legally they could terminate what, either call it a life or don't call it a life. But in the major moral questions of every person's life, at the end of the day, people don't have a guiding light. Why should they decide this way over that way? And at the end of the day, if you can read articles by people who are very moral and they say euthanasia is the way to go, if a person is suffering, a grandparent, a great-grandparent, an old relative is suffering in the hospital, so What right do you have to prolong that pain? Right? You could present it that way. Help him end his pain. Maybe it's right. Let him die. So these questions can take on different fronts. You could say, do you give him a shot that'll put him to sleep? It's a nice way of saying kill him. You could say, do you resuscitate? Is it fair not to resuscitate? All these questions, unfortunately, come up every day. And if a person is going to decide on his own, then he could spend his whole life saying, did I do right? A person can say, hey, half the world thinks this way, half the world thinks that way. Let me do what works best for me. Why should I do something that doesn't work for me? If some people say that to abort a child with Down syndrome is the most moral thing you could do, so why should I spend my life bringing up a kid like that? You know how much work that is? You know how much money that is? It's definitely hard on the parents. So if you have legitimacy for both sides, and so long as you hold, you believe, that the term good is not connected with truth, so then who's to say what's good? Most philosophers today say that there's no connection between truth and good. Whatever you feel is good is going to be good. And whatever society defines as good is good. You can't place a mark and say this is good. Look at history. Every generation defines something else as good. So in some states, it's legal to have abortions. In some states, it's illegal. What's good? What's right? Can you force this woman to go through with the pregnancy? You know what pain it is to give birth to a child? On every question, we could try and support the belief that there's a legitimate side, that to be good is to do one way or the other way. The Gemara says this. The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu had the laws of logic that God gave him, and he had the Torah. And then he said, God, how am I going to decide? And God says, well, use the logic. And Moshe said, well, if it's just up to logic, then I could prove this way and that way. I could use the logic to prove both ways. What do you say about people who are insane? People who are severely handicapped. It costs a lot of money for society, and what quality of life do they have? So there were people who said they should be put to death. They were called Nazis. Even today, there are doctors and, so to speak, moral bioethicists who believe that one could put such a child to death. Certainly, so long as he hasn't yet been born. Now we come to Judaism. Where does it all begin? And where does it end? When Hashem says that He's the one that created the world, the Torah begins with God is the one who created the world, and that's one of the basics of Jewish faith. Then God is saying, I know what is right in the world, and I know what is wrong in the world. I created this world. And there is a connection between good and bad and true and false. The Torah says, this is good and this is bad. Hashem tells us, A, B, C is good. Be kind to your fellow man. Help your fellow man. Give charity to your fellow man. To kill your fellow man is bad. To steal from your fellow man is bad. There are things that the Torah defines as good. There are things that the Torah defines as bad. And there are things, believe it or not, that the Torah doesn't express an opinion on. There are those areas where the Torah says, you can do what you want. Should I put on my shirt or my undershirt first? Do what you want. Should I have longer hair or shorter hair? Do what you want. Should I grow a beard or not grow a beard? So some say you should grow a beard. But there are many who say, do what you want. Depends on how you understand certain things. There are many things which the Torah says you can do what you want. There are many things which the Torah says this is good and this is bad. And when we approach the Torah, we have to remember that the Torah is God-given. And very often, when we discuss things here at the Machon, I feel like guys discuss things and they say, yeah, I buy that. Or, nah, I don't think so. What do you mean you don't think so? If it's my philosophy you're arguing with, okay, so we could both have a discussion. But if we're dealing with the Torah, then the Torah is not an opinion. The Torah is what God said is the right thing in this world. And that gives it far more weight than what we'll think, because our opinions are going to change. as we grow, as we develop, our opinions change. There was once a politician here in Israel who didn't keep a promise. So they asked him, but you promised. So he said, yeah, but did I promise to keep my promise? So that's become that's become a common line in Israel. Now, when it comes to promises, that doesn't work. But when it comes to philosophies, the sign of an intelligent person is one who develops. When you speak to him today, he's going to think one way. And hopefully when you speak to him in a week, a month, a year from now, he's going to have developed his thought and he's going to think slightly differently. We're not expected to stay in the same place. We're supposed to develop. We're supposed to grow. And if we grow, then our opinions are going to change. And if our opinions change, then we can't be counted on to define what is good and what is bad. Because we've only attained that much at this point in our lives. And every person in every society is that way. Society today understands a lot more than it did many years ago, but we're still moving forward. When people are faced with the most difficult questions in life, sometimes they ask a rabbi. Sometimes they say, why should I ask the rabbi? Well, we just answered that. If a person is faced with a question, they have a child that is going to be born with certain handicaps, and they're wondering, should we abort or shouldn't we abort? Could we afford this pregnancy or not? Should we give up the kid for adoption or not? If they made the call on their own, aside from the fact that they might have transgressed the biblical commandment, they also have not necessarily done what is good. They might have done what's good for them, but if a person wants to be a good person, and every person should want to be a good person, then he was given the key to perform good actions in this world. He was given the Torah. So it's true, if the average person opens up the Torah and reads in it, he won't find the answers for everything, for every question he has. But that's why we say, go to a rabbi. Speak to someone who has learned more. We have a tradition. The Torah was given together with the oral law. The Torah was given with the tradition. And the idea is that God said, I'm going to give you the answer to your questions here. Not every question has an answer. There are situations where we say, person has a very difficult disease. And the doctors say, it's X percent chance that they'll conquer it, and Y percent chance that they will not. And at the same time, doctors say, you know, the treatment itself is dangerous to the patient, and the treatment itself is very, very painful. Should the patient undergo the treatment or not? So if that patient calls up his rabbi, it depends on the statistics, but there will be situations where the rabbi will say, the halacha doesn't tell you what to do here. No one can call the shot. As far as we know today, that's a shot a person himself has to call. Not in every situation will the rabbi tell him, the halacha says, go try the treatment. You gotta try your luck. We have right now a woman who tried every form of chemo and nothing worked. And then they told her there's an experimental form that just came out. Some kind of plant, some kind of seaweed that grows near Japan. And they have a new chemical that comes out of it called Yandelis. And they're trying it out. Do you want to join the experiment? So she asked her rabbi. She's number two in the country who's getting this treatment. So he said, yeah, for sure. You give life every shot you've got. Thank God she's still alive. You never know. She was saying, hey, if everything else didn't work, why should this work? He said, no. In life, you got to give it your best shot. You don't give up. They have one more form of treatment. So aspirin was once experimental as well. So that's a shot that's difficult to call. But that's why you go and ask the question. If a person has asked and he has seeked out what the Torah says is good, then he could live at peace with himself the rest of his life, regardless what his decision was. Because he knows that he has gone to the source, he has gone to what God gave us as the guide in this world, and he has asked, what does the Torah say is the good thing to do? And then, whatever happens, he's done his best. If, on the other hand, the person takes it on his own shoulders, and he decides, okay, I'm going to do what I think is good, he could spend the rest of his life questioning himself, and rightfully so. And he could decide one day he was right and one day he was wrong, and he'll never know. Any questions? I don't know if the silence means you're all asleep, you're all contemplating.
A little both.
Maybe a little both, okay?
Yeah. It's So okay, that's pretty understandable. But it's subjective. Not the truth, not the goodness of the Torah is not subjective. I mean, there are certain areas where it's difficult to find the greater good. Like the cat, like the euthanasia, I mean, there's a greater good.
About the cat, there is a halacha. About euthanasia, there is a halacha. These discussions didn't begin today.
But
about
truth,
euthanasia.
Truth is, they're connected to goodness, but truth is subjective also.
How is truth subjective?
Well, there's big truth and there's little truth.
I didn't want to... Yeah, I'm listening. Yeah.
There's a big truth of... I think there's truth in Torah and truth in ultimate truth is Hashem. But there's also a little truth that if your wife comes in and says, does this dress make me look fat? You're like, no, that doesn't make you look fat. No way. No way will that dress ever make you look fat. There's no way. Never.
How does that pertain to here? I'm not with you.
No. I mean, so it could be true, it could be not true. But the thing you're going to say is it's a small truth.
I don't know why you're using the term true. You're saying something which you want to make her happy. Whether it's true or not has nothing to do with it. Why are you calling it true just because you said it?
If the dress does make her look fat, it's not the truth.
Okay, so why are you calling it the truth? It's a lie to make her happy, but it's not the truth. No, I don't understand.
No, it's not the truth.
It's
that's
not
what I'm saying.
Why, one second, how did you put that into the set that we're going to call truth?
Because it's not truth. I'm saying truth, there's truth and there's not truth.
Okay, so this is not truth. Why call it truth and then say truth is also not truth? That's what you're doing. You're saying I'll lie, I'll call that truth, and then I'll say truth is also not truth.
All right, you're right.
No?
No, you're right.
Yeah, sorry. What?
Were you trying to say that you should say that you're fat in the dress?
No, what I'm saying is there's big truth and there's small truth. Or, I mean, I shouldn't say it that way. That's incorrect. What I meant to say was...
Are you saying that you do in that situation?
Yeah, I'm saying sometimes it's okay to lie.
So the Torah says that sometimes a person should lie, but we shouldn't expand that. And even when it's okay to lie, you have to think if you have to lie. You could say you look great in that dress. Maybe she does. You haven't said she looks fat or skinny. You said she looks great. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, but if you're saying like, I don't know, maybe I digest this wrong here, but like somebody does want to take their own life, right? Yes, it's not truth in the sense that they shouldn't be doing it. But if somebody wants to do it, isn't it their own like personal truth where they know they know they're breaking it and like they shouldn't be doing it, but they are going to do it. So shouldn't you let that person do it, or do you know if he's going to go take a bunch of pills or something to end it? You know, at what point do you say?
So that's really two questions put together in one.
Yeah.
One is the question, if a person so-and-so wants to take his own life, does he have a right to do what he wants? That's question number one. Question number two is, even if he doesn't have the right, do I have the right to interfere when he
right.
doesn't have the right?
Right.
So let's just, once we've broken it down, now let's analyze both questions. How do we view this world? What's the purpose of the world and what's the purpose of our being here? Ask yourself the question.
Right.
Okay, so you answer.
Right, but if somebody doesn't want that responsibility,
what is the purpose?
Let me ask you a different question. The person is sitting behind a nuclear missile. He's responsible for this nuclear missile.
Right.
And he's the one that's sitting at the computer. He could push the button to fire that nuclear missile at Russia. And who knows what'll happen then?
Right.
The guy's had it. His wife is driving him crazy. His kids are driving him up the wall. They're stealing money from his wallet. His wife is gambling his money down the tubes. His parents hate his guts. They've disowned him. His boss says he's going to fire him. The United States, all over the tabloids, they're discussing what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's going nuts. He walks into work one day and he says, "This world stinks. This world is terrible. There's no reason to leave this world around." You know, this was a going philosophy about 20, 30 years ago. The world is so terrible, don't bring kids to the world because it's a terrible place. Don't make them suffer through this world. So the guy walks into his job and he looks at that little red button and he says, if I push that, I'm going to help everyone.
Right.
Just one little push. Button, the missile goes, and from there it's on autopilot. Russia reacts, the United States reacts, biff, bam, boom. Nothing left. I'll do everyone the biggest favor. I just can't handle it. I just can't. Now he's got to press it. What are you going to say to this guy?
You're no longer allowed in this room ever again.
I think it's subjective.
Where would you send this guy? I don't know. What do you mean subjective?
It's subjective. According to him, yeah, he's right.
Right.
The world does stink, and maybe he does have a point.
Maybe he's right. You know, he could be right.
According to him, no, look at his life. It stinks.
Yeah.
But it could get better, so who knows? But I mean, according to another person, according to another person, then it's totally different, deal.
I think that what I would tell this person is that if your life stinks, that doesn't mean you could affect everyone else's life. And by pushing that button, you're ruining everyone else's life. Go to an insane asylum, go to a psychiatrist, go do something. But don't affect everyone else's life.
Right.
I think that if we're viewing the world and our lives through a very, very small people. We're looking at our lives as though it's only me. And if I want to take my own life, I'm entitled to. And we're forgetting that if I was placed on this earth, then I have a responsibility. I might be the one to discover penicillin. I might be the one to save someone's life. There's a beautiful movie that's shown around Christmas time in the United States again and again. It's called It's a Wonderful Life.
Jimmy Stewart.
You guys know the movie? A guy decides that his life is worthless, he's done more harm than good, and he wants to take his life. And there's this new angel up in heaven that has to prove himself. And so the angel, in order to get his wings, he comes down and he shows him his life without him. He shows him the world without him in this world. And he shows him how bad the world would be if he wouldn't be here. I think that if we view our lives as something, it's my own, I can do whatever I want with it, I was put in this world. Subjective is the term that's been used here. I can do what I want. If things are going rough, let me make my own choice and decide to end it. So yeah, that's looking at your life as very, very small. It's only you. But if you look at your life as you have responsibilities in this world and you never know when you're going to fulfill them, and some people only fulfill their responsibilities towards the end of their lives. Rabbi Akiva taught thousands of students and all them perished. And it was only at the end of his life that he taught the last four or five students that they kept the whole oral law going. Rabbi Akiva had many times to give up in his life. He was divorced or widowed. When he married Rachel, he already had a son, Yeshua. He was already 40 years old. He knew nothing. It's very easy to give up, man. The Romans were persecuting. The Roman viceroy hated his guts. The Roman viceroy's wife wanted to have him killed. She ended up marrying him. But everyone wanted to get rid of him. And he was put in jail. To give up is the easiest, but to give up is, again, to be self-centered and focused on what do I want. Whereas if we look at a bigger picture and we say, I was put in this world with responsibilities. Tell you the truth, I also want to think about what I want. Very often when I was in yeshiva, I'd come back after a tough day, tell my roommate, I want to give up. That's it. Why should I stay in yeshiva? Let me go. And he'd tell me, I'll get you a pack of bananas, go climb a tree. And what he was telling me was, he always said the same thing. If you came down to this world to be a monkey, to live like a monkey and do nothing with your life, so go climb a tree and eat some bananas. There's no purpose to your life. But if you came here with a purpose, then you have to put up with what stuff. And for a person to say, it's my life, let me do what I want. Yeah, it's your life, but it's your life with your responsibilities. Not your life to say, okay, so I'll end it, I'll do whatever I want. Now, that's not easy. There are halachas that discuss if a person is in great pain, do we have to resuscitate? And there will be circumstances where we do not. And there will be circumstances where the person could say, do not resuscitate. That's different, because we consider him halachically dead, and the question is, should we bring him back? So there we could say, who said you have to bring him back? That's a different question. Each question has to be posed. For a person to say, it's my life means I'm the boss. And to an extent, every person is the boss over his own life. He's the boss over what he's going to do, but only to an extent. We also have to remember that there's a ripple effect to everything we do. There's nothing that's private. Today we understand it more than we did in the past. But even if you look through the mindset of the past, without today's world where everything's connected and we see how the world is connected. You have family, you have other people. Every action a person does affects a lot of other people. The Gemara records a story. There was a disciple who was sitting next to his Rebbe, and they were at an inn. And a girl came and served them their food. And he turned to his Rebbe and he said, "Boy, she's got gorgeous eyes." And his Rebbe said, "You noticed her eyes? Get away from me." And the disciple understood that he had erred. And halachically, when a disciple hears from his Rebbe, "Get away from me," so it has halachic implications. And the disciple understood that he's supposed to keep a distance from his Rebbe till he fixes himself. So he came back once, and he said, "Rebbe, I'm sorry. I've done better." The Gemara records exactly how it went, and finally when he came back, I don't remember how many times he tried coming back, but one time that he came back, his Rebbe was in the middle of Shema. And he said, "I'm sorry, Rebbe, let me back." And he was going to tell him, okay, but he was in the middle of Shema. And that disciple said, "You know what, that's it, I've had it." And he went out and he became what's commonly known as Jesus. Jesus began as a student in Yeshiva who was learning. He wasn't the most proper student. He didn't have good lineage. He was probably an illicit child. But he was still a student in Yeshiva. Sometimes even the action of not treating someone nicely enough can have a ripple effect we see till today. I mean, look at all Christianity, look at how much blood was shed. Where did it all begin? Because the Rebbe was a drop too tough with a disciple. So certainly, a person can't judge and say, "I'm like this, I'm like that." Person never knows when he's going to have that moment that his whole life was worth it for. Sometimes a person has the moment at the end of his life. Sometimes it's one conversation. I'm always surprised when guys email me back after they leave the machon. I'm surprised by what they remember. Half the time they remember things I don't remember I said. We never know what impact we have on other people. It could be a roommate, it could be a son, it could be a grandson, it could be a spouse, it could be a neighbor. We don't know. A person shouldn't be so quick to decide, "My job is over." You never know. Anything else? Okay.